the U.S. Embassy overrun in Iran.
The demonstration has been peaceful and no one has been hurt.
For some time, Iran's religious leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, has been blaming the United States for all of Iran's problems. Early Sunday, with the Ayatollah's blessing, a group of Iranian students rushed the U.S. Embassy and inside took some 100 hostages, all the while promising to treat their captives well. The demands?
We want to send Shah back to Iran. We want our government to cut their relations with the American government.
The Shah is undergoing cancer treatment at a New York hospital.
A spokeswoman for the Shah of Iran says the deposed monarch has no comments on events at the American embassy in Tehran. Iranian students have taken over the embassy and are holding at least 59 Americans hostage, demanding extradition of the Shah to face Islamic justice.
Young Iranians, described as students acting with the blessing of Ayatollah Khomeini, have occupied the American embassy in Tehran and hold more than 50 hostages there. They demand extradition of the Shah, who is now under medical treatment in New York. The U.S. consulates in the cities of Tabriz and Shiraz have also been occupied, and the mob has now taken over the British embassy in Tehran as well, after the state radio broadcast a statement by the Ayatollah accusing Britain of sheltering former Prime Minister Shapour Bakhtiar. Washington sources say the United States will certainly not extradite the Shah, and the question was further raised in Washington this morning whether the U.S. would try to evacuate the American nationals still in Iran. More from Marvin Kalb.
An official here at the State Department Task Force says that so far as he knows, there is now no serious consideration being given by the administration to a military evacuation of the hostage Americans. The official says the administration will continue to pursue a diplomatic solution. The problem with that is that the U.S. is working with the Barzagan government in Tehran, and that government itself is under increasing pressure from supporters of the Ayatollah Khomeini to resign. The split between the government and the religious leader has been a long-standing one, but ever since the Prime Minister's meeting last weekend in Algiers with National Security Advisor Brzezinski, the split has definitely deepened, meaning the reed on which the U.S. is hanging its efforts to secure the release of the hostages has never been more strained or less dependable. Officials here feel frustrated by their inability to protect American citizens in Tehran, and relations between the U.S. and Iran may well get much worse. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The protesters are now occupying the U.S. and British embassies in Tehran, as well as two American consulates elsewhere in Iran. The protesters, said to be students, are demanding that the United States send the deposed Shah back to Iran for trial. The Shah is being treated for cancer in New York City, and today the State Department said he will be allowed to remain here for that treatment. Protesters who took over the British embassy are demanding that Britain return former Prime Minister Bakhtiar to Iran. Ayatollah Khomeini says Britain is sheltering Bakhtiar, but in fact, Bakhtiar is in France.
Muslim students have seized yet another embassy and more hostages in Iran. Students stormed the British embassy, and a British official says 27 people are being held hostage. Not far off, a siege continues at the U.S. embassy in Tehran. The students say all of their several dozen American hostages are well. The State Department is keeping a close watch on developments in Tehran. CBS News correspondent Marvin Kalb says plans are to continue working through diplomatic channels to gain freedom for the hostages.
An official here at the State Department Task Force says that so far as he knows, there is now no serious consideration being given by the administration to a military evacuation of the hostage Americans. The official says the administration will continue to pursue a diplomatic solution. The problem with that is that the U.S. is working with the Barzagan government in Tehran, and that government itself is under increasing pressure from supporters of the Ayatollah Khomeini to resign. The split between the government and the religious leader has been a long-standing one, but ever since the Prime Minister's meeting last weekend in Algiers with National Security Advisor Brzezinski, the split has definitely deepened, meaning the reed on which the U.S. is hanging its efforts to secure the release of the hostages has never been more strained or less dependable. Officials here feel frustrated by their inability to protect American citizens in Tehran, and relations between the U.S. and Iran may well get much worse. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Iranian revolutionaries heard a speech by Ayatollah Khomeini condemning the British today, and they swept into the British embassy in Tehran and occupied it. They were already holding some 60 Americans hostage in the U.S. embassy seized over the weekend, refusing to allow outsiders to see their captives. Khomeini had accused the British of harboring the former Prime Minister Bakhtiar. In Paris, where Bakhtiar has been all along, he scoffed at directing the message to Britain. But Bakhtiar reasoned, since the Ayatollah himself had used France as the base for his anti-Shah revolution, it would be embarrassing to threaten his former hosts. As for the revolutionaries' demand that the Shah be forced out of his New York City hospital room and returned to Iran, the State Department spokesman Hodding Carter says there's no thought of that.
It is well understood that the Shah is here for medical treatment and not for permanent residence. That is the status of his staying here, and he will stay here while he's under that status.
CBS News, the takeover of the British Embassy in Tehran is over, but negotiations continue to end the one at the U.S. compound. I'm David Jackson reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Iranian students and Revolutionary Guards who took over the British building left after holding the place for 6 hours. Nobody reported hurt. The takeover was called a protest over Britain's harboring the one-time prime minister for the deposed Shah, Shapur Bakhtiar. He is in Paris. Other students still hold the U.S. embassy with some 70 hostages inside. They want the U.S. to send the Shah back home for trial. The State Department has said no. The Shah is undergoing cancer treatment in New York. Diane Sawyer in Washington has the latest on negotiations to end the standoff.
Ali Agha, the ranking diplomat at the Iranian embassy in Washington, said his government will not try to gain release of the American hostages unless the United States makes concessions on the return of the Shah and his money and property.
Our government reflects the wish and the will of the people. We cannot say to these students that your demand is wrong, because we also demand the same thing.
Agha, who was clearly staking out a negotiating position, was vague about the exact nature of the concessions the Iranian government demands. At one point, he indicated his government might settle for a sign of a new United States attitude. At another point, he seemed to say that nothing less than extradition of the Shah would do. Agha did make it clear, however, that his government will make every effort to ensure the health and safety of the hostages, whether or not the United States is responsive to its diplomatic demands. Diane Sawyer, CBS News, Washington.
President Carter called his top political and military advisors to Camp David early today, and although there seemed to be no fresh urgency to such a meeting, the presidential language afterward was tougher than ever. Robert Pierpoint reports.
For the first time since last year's Israeli-Egyptian summit, reporters and photographers were allowed to cover the arrival from the grounds of Camp David in order to dramatize President Carter's efforts on behalf of the American hostages. The group summoned to this morning's meeting by the president met for 2 hours and 20 minutes in the main conference room at Laurel Lodge, discussing and reviewing the entire situation in Iran. In view of Khomeini's support of the militants' threats to kill the hostages, it was decided that President Carter should issue yet another warning. That was done through Press Secretary Jody Powell, who told reporters, "The president has asked me to tell you that in his view, the last American hostage is just as important to the United States as the first. The consequences of harm to any single hostage will be extremely grave." Powell would not elaborate on what the president meant by extremely grave, but this is clearly a follow-up to earlier hints of military action by the United States if any of the hostages are harmed. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
It's hard to know what is real and what is rhetoric or saving face in Iran now. But there is talk in the Revolutionary Council of refusing to pay the formidable debts that the Shah left behind. About 20 Americans marched in Tehran today to demand the return of the Shah. They said they know he's a murderer. Tom Fenton has more on the story from Tehran.
With the students who have been holding American diplomats hostage for 20 days still maintaining their non-negotiable demands for return of the Shah, private efforts to mediate with the Iranian government apparently bore some fruit today. Republican Congressman George Hansen of Idaho, after 3 days of talks with members of the Iranian government and the Revolutionary Council, called a press conference to announce the results of his private mission.
I can now advise you that I am convinced that the situation can be resolved through dialogue, by initiatives, and by fair-mindedness. In a meeting with Foreign Minister Banisadr, our discussion was very productive. He presented my plan which would call for congressional investigations into charges of atrocities and financial abuses, to the Revolutionary Council, who agreed to its merit.
There have been several reports in the past 24 hours, some from Iranian sources, that the hostages might be released if the Shah left the United States for another country. Banisadr today denied this. He said it might have worked at the beginning, but was no longer possible at this stage of the crisis. It would simply not be enough to satisfy the students. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Tehran.
The White House and the State Department are not very happy about Congressman Hansen's trip to Tehran. Apparently, he told only his wife and an aide that he was going, and the money comes out of his own pocket. More on this from Marvin Kalb.
It was done politely, but the spokesman warned that diplomatic efforts to secure the hostages' release ought best to be left in the hands of professionals. In that respect, one source here says there is inching progress now being made on the release of the hostages. Another source says expect nothing until at least December 2nd, when Iranians vote on a new Islamic constitution. That date is significant in other respects, too. It's the culmination of a passionate period of religious fervor in Iran. It's when the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk moves into position near the Persian Gulf. And it's when congressional sources now expect the Shah to return to Mexico. In addition, Arab diplomats say Iran is in severe economic trouble, increasingly isolated, and may release the hostages if some kind of face-saving investigation is launched into the Shah's alleged crimes. What is not known is Khomeini's attitude to this kind of possible compromise. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
This day marks the end of 3 weeks of captivity for the Americans held at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. And today, another well-publicized meeting at Camp David to emphasize this country's constant preoccupation with their release. Robert Pierpoint has more from the White House.
The president left for Camp David just 1 week ago today, having canceled previous plans to spend Thanksgiving week vacationing on an island off Georgia, so he could keep in closer contact with the agonizing situation in Iran. That, Mr. Carter has done on an almost hourly basis, including one brief trip back to the White House by helicopter last Wednesday for a meeting with his closest advisors, before hinting for the first time that the United States is considering the use of military force, if necessary, against Iran. That threat has been reemphasized since then and receives another boost today when Mr. Carter confers with the Secretary of Defense and his Armed Services Chiefs of Staff. This morning's meeting was scheduled to take up the next fiscal year's military budget, but White House officials carefully suggest Iran will also be on the agenda. The point of all this is to draw world attention to the fact that America can use military force if necessary, and there is a probability it would do so if any of the hostages are harmed. Meantime, President Carter clearly hopes everyone gets the point, here and around the world, so maximum pressure can be applied to Khomeini and his militants to solve the problem peacefully. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, at the White House.
In Tehran, one of the Iranian students holding the U.S. Embassy told Reuters news agency by telephone that, and we quote, "If President Carter and his men continue to speak nonsense and threaten us, we will put the hostages on trial sooner." The first U.S. action in response to the takeover was the cutoff of oil imports. Comment on that today in Tehran, reported by Randy Daniels.
Iranian oil minister Ali Akbar Moinfar said the U.S. decision to ban the importation of Iranian oil has had no negative effect on Iran. He said oil revenues have actually increased 10% since President Carter announced the embargo, while Iranian oil production has actually declined. Moinfar said Iran is diverting the 700,000 barrels a day that normally would have gone to the United States to the spot market, where the price for crude oil is considerably higher than the fixed rate established by oil-producing countries. The Iranian officials said the government intends to reduce production regularly and that oil policy will be shaped by events related to the Shah's return to Iran. Moinfar said any country found to be funneling Iranian oil to the U.S. will be blacklisted. Iran is also considering not accepting dollars for Iranian oil because of the declining value of the dollar, as well as a punitive economic gesture toward the United States. When asked what would be Iran's action if the United States seized Iranian oil fields, Moinfar said the wells would be blown up before Iran would allow anyone to occupy her fields. Randy Daniels, CBS News, Tehran.
Another bitter speech today by Ayatollah Khomeini, the Ayatollah accusing President Carter of violating all human rights with threats of military intervention and economic blockades.
Foreign ambassadors to Pakistan met in Islamabad today to discuss tightened security arrangements for their embassies following this week's attack on the U.S. embassy. That embassy staff is down to skeleton size today. Non-essential embassy personnel and dependents came home last night, and Susan Spencer was there to meet them.
Friends and relatives screamed their greetings last night as the 388 American evacuees trickled through customs at Dulles International Airport, exhausted from a 20-hour flight from Pakistan. Some had been in the U.S. Embassy when it was attacked and burned on Wednesday. Others, like Wendy Carrico, had been in a nearby American school when the trouble came.
It was really frightening because we didn't expect them to come to the school. Yeah. They told us we couldn't go home because it wasn't safe at the embassy.
What happened there?
Just a few people came over the wall and all, but it wasn't as bad as the embassy. We were all scared, but nothing happened to any kids. No kids got hurt.
Did you want to leave?
No, I didn't want to leave.
You didn't want to leave Pakistan?
No.
Why not?
A lot.
The Americans not from the Washington area spent the night in nearby hotels, courtesy of the State Department. They will return to their homes now and await word as to when, or if, they'll ever be going back to Pakistan. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Washington.
The trouble in Islamabad was set off by false rumors the U.S. was responsible for the takeover of the Grand Mosque in Mecca, where now Saudi forces are reported preparing to starve out the remaining occupiers. Michael Hall has more from Jeddah.
Mecca's holy mosque remained under siege for the fifth day today, but there were conflicting reports on what was happening in the streets of Islam's holiest city. Some callers from Mecca reported more gunfire this morning, while others said a sudden calm descended on the city about noon. A 24-hour-a-day curfew has been in effect there, and the Saudi Arabian government has had nothing to say on the siege for a full day. The Saudi newspaper Al Jazeera this morning printed an interview with the imam, or religious leader of the mosque, in which he said he managed to escape soon after the attack Tuesday morning. Earlier reports said he was killed when a group of about 200 tribesmen took over the mosque 5 days ago during dawn prayers. Michael Hall for CBS News, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
Treasury Secretary G. William Miller is in Riyadh today talking to Saudi officials about maintaining their current high oil production. Miller also telling the Saudis that the U.S. is considering drastic new energy conservation measures.
Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini today hurled more broadcast epithets at President Carter, accusing him of using jungle law to try to free the 49 U.S. hostages still being held at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. The militants holding that embassy tonight said Khomeini himself will set a date for the spy trials of the Americans. President Carter is meeting with Defense Secretary Brown and the Joint Chiefs of Staff today at Camp David, a meeting originally called to go over military budgets, but one that now will also cover strategies to end the crisis with Iran.
In Washington, the Carter administration reversed a previous stand, saying it supports the council session. State Department had opposed a meeting of the 15-nation council until all Americans are freed from the U.S. embassy in Tehran. There may be a change coming in the attitude of the Iranians holding hostages at the American embassy in Tehran. Reporter Carolyn Lesh says some encouraging words have come during a radio interview.
The acting Iranian foreign minister says Iran may be ready to discuss the liberation of the embassy hostages. But first, Abdul Hassan Banisard says the United States must publish an official declaration condemning the abuses of the former imperial regime. And he says the condemnation would have to be published when the Shah is still in the United States. The acting foreign minister who made the comments in a friendly
Well, we apologize for some problems in that tape-recorded report from Carolyn Lesh in Tehran. She says that Iran may be ready to discuss releasing the hostages, but the country's acting foreign minister says the United States will first have to publish an official declaration denouncing the Shah and his former government. Earlier today, Iran's news agency announced that acting foreign minister Bani Sadra would fly to New York tomorrow to address the UN Council, the Security Council, and demand that the U.S. send the Shah back to Iran. But hours later, the trip was postponed for at least a week because of a Muslim holiday. There were scattered anti-Iranian protests across America today. There were rallies here in Los Angeles and San Francisco. More than 10,000 people crammed the boardwalk of a New Jersey seaside resort to protest the holding of the hostages. In Gainesville, Florida, police broke up a fight between socialists marching in support of Iran and counter-demonstrators.
The World This Week. Khomeini calls for mass support in Tehran. And he gets it. Vance greets the few who came home from Iran.
All Americans welcome you and your return
on this Thanksgiving Day.
Some came home, too, from Pakistan.
It was pretty serious, I thought. I think all the Americans had to get out.
And Senator Jackson, among others, discounts coincidence.
You simply did not have these events in Pakistan all happening, bing, 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 and in Mecca on an uncoordinated basis.
I'm David Jackson, CBS News reporting on the CBS Radio Network. This was not a good week in the crisis with Iran. Tension heightened, resolve seemed to stiffen on both sides. It began with a glimmer of hope, as first three American hostages were freed, then 10 more. One of the first out, Kathy Gross, an embassy secretary.
We weren't permitted to get up and walk around. We had to sit in a chair all day long. Once in a while, they would get upset. Ask them why they have to sit down, why can't they get up and do what they want to, why can't we go home, why are we staying here?
And as conventional diplomacy seemed to falter, a U.S. politician, Republican Representative George Hansen of Idaho, decided to make a private trip to Tehran.
I can now advise you that I am convinced that the situation can be resolved through dialogue, by initiatives, and by fair-mindedness.
The U.S. this week, for the first time, did not rule out military force to deal with the crisis. And Ayatollah Khomeini then told his followers to turn out en masse against the United States for traditional marches on the day of mourning. They did, perhaps a million strong. Still, just an exclamation point in a long, continuing story, as Don Cladstrup reports from Tehran.
It has been a week of constant demonstrations and escalating rhetoric. While Washington warned Iran of severe consequences if any of the hostages were harmed, students holding the Americans vowed to kill them and blow up the embassy if the U.S. staged military action to free them. Ayatollah Khomeini warned he would not be able to control the students or any of the Iranian people if the United States used military force. Iran's military was placed on alert, but officials here said they did not think a confrontation was likely. 13 American hostages have been freed so far, but 49 others remain. And Ayatollah Khomeini says the only way the rest will be released is for the U.S. to first return the Shah. However, two visitors to Tehran this week suggested some other solutions might be possible. Idaho Republican Congressman George Hansen proposed that a congressional inquiry about the Shah be conducted. Members of Iran's Revolutionary Council called it a deal they couldn't refuse. At about the same time, Sean McBride, part of a two-man UNESCO delegation, suggested the hostages might be released if the U.S. adopted a declaration of principle regarding the Shah's guilt and agreed to a panel of jurists which would investigate charges of crimes by the former monarch. The proposals of both men seem to appeal to many Iranian leaders, but only one man, Ayatollah Khomeini, really counts. And so far, the Ayatollah has not budged from his original position that the United States first surrender the Shah. Don Cladstrup, CBS News, Tehran.
As the week ended, the U.S. dropped objections to a U.N. Security Council meeting on the crisis, feeling it might lessen tensions and would as well give the Iranians a first-hand look at world opinion against them. Foreign Minister Bani Sadr first said he would arrive in New York Monday, then postponed the trip for a week or so because of religious holidays and Iran's upcoming constitutional referendum. The crisis in Islam took an unexpected turn this week as gunmen took hostages at the Holy of Holies. Details from Michael Hall in Saudi Arabia.
The siege of the Holy Mosque in Mecca sent shockwaves throughout the Orthodox Muslim Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The Saudis have always prided themselves on their devotion to Islam and on their position as protectors of holy shrines in Mecca and Medina, where the Prophet Muhammad lived and preached. The kingdom's law is based on the Quran, the Muslim holy book. So for a group to seize the holiest place of all, the Grand Mosque in Mecca, was clearly intolerable to leaders here. The authorities' first step was to procure a fatwa, or religious decree, branding the 200 or so followers of a self-proclaimed holy man as heretics. From that point, it was a five-day struggle to oust the attackers, with Saudi security forces cautiously battling their way through the vast mosque in an effort to do as little damage as possible. Followers of the group had clearly expected popular approval for their fundamentalist doctrine, but there have been no indications of any such support. In the rest of Saudi Arabia, there was only anger and dismay at the attack. Michael Hall for CBS News, Jeddah.
Another U.S. embassy under fire this week. Angry mobs sacked the compound in Islamabad, Pakistan, and attacked U.S. offices in other cities. Their rage sparked by reports from Iran denied in the U.S. that the United States was involved in the mosque takeover in Mecca.
Two U.S. servicemen were killed in the Islamabad attack. Embassy staffers retreated to a third-floor vault where sensitive communications gear was kept. There, says State Department spokesman Hadding Carter, they stayed for hours as the building burned around them.
They had stayed in that room at least until the rug under their feet was beginning to smolder. There had been firing through shafts from the roof by some of the members of the mob down the shaft, an attempt, I suppose, to ricochet into the room. They made their way to the roof and made their way down from the roof. They were then escorted from the area by army vehicles.
The Pakistani army did eventually rescue the Americans, and the U.S. thanked them for that, but ordered U.S. dependents and non-essential personnel out of Pakistan. The Pakistanis call that an overreaction.
The 15-member Security Council will be holding private consultations Monday morning on Secretary General Waldheim's request for an urgent meeting on the crisis between the United States and Iran. Waldheim made the unusual personal request because he said the situation poses a grave threat to world peace. A State Department source says the United States is hoping the council will pass a resolution calling for the release of the 49 American hostages held in Tehran. But as he arrived back at the White House Sunday night from Camp David, President Carter said he is not particularly optimistic that a UN resolution would win the hostages' release. The council's private talks could produce a public session by Monday afternoon. Iran's second most influential religious leader, Ayatollah Shariat Madari, is quoted as saying the extradition of the Shah to Iran is not essential. Shariat Madari said in an interview the seizure of the U.S. embassy would not have happened if he were in Ayatollah Khomeini's place. CBS News. The 49 American hostages under the gun in Tehran will have their plight aired at the United Nations. I'm Jay Jones reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Secretary General Waldheim took advantage of a U.N. article used only once before to ask for an urgent meeting of the Security Council on the crisis, saying it poses a grave threat to world peace.
I did what I considered is necessary. I did what I consider is my duty in a situation where I came to the conclusion that such a meeting is helpful. We have tried through all kinds of channels, as you know, and until now, at least, we were not able to overcome the difficulties, to bridge the gap, and therefore I came to the conclusion that the best is to have a meeting of the Council.
That meeting has been scheduled for late tomorrow afternoon. The United States is backing Waldheim's action, even though it successfully fought an earlier call for a Security Council session because it was from Iran. President Carter said tonight he is not particularly optimistic that any council resolution would secure release of the hostages. But the UN meeting has been welcomed on Capitol Hill by Senator John Hines of Pennsylvania, for one.
I would hope that we could have a Security Council meeting that would present the president with more options than I think he has been considering thus far. I don't fault the president particularly, although I think there's some things he might have done earlier on. I think he should, at the outset, not have ruled out the use of force, because to rule it in all of a sudden now creates some complications, and you should never take some of your best cards out of the deck if you're going to play this kind of very high-stakes poker.
Senator Hines.
Don't you think you get any help from any Islamic country? And what will your policy be towards the Islamic countries under these circumstances?
Well, the premise of your question is completely wrong. We are not approaching any sort of Cold War with the Islamic countries. So far as I know, every Islamic country has condemned Iran for its capture of our hostages and has been very supportive. This includes Muslim nations, which in the past have not been close friends of ours, Iraq, Libya, and others. So I don't see this as a confrontation at all between our nation and the Islamic world. It's certainly not part of the Islamic faith to condone, as I said earlier, blackmail or the persecution or harm of innocent people or kidnapping or terrorism. So I think that we have a very good relationship with the people and the governments of the Islamic world, and I don't think it's deteriorated in this instance. In some ways, we've been drawn closer to these people because they see what has occurred in Iran as something of a disgrace for their own religious faith. And they don't see this as typical of what Muslims believe. I might add also that this is not typical of the Shiite faith either. It's the misguided actions of a few people in Iran who are burning with hatred and a desire for revenge, completely contrary to the teachings of the Muslim faith.
Mr. President, there is a feeling of hostility throughout the country towards Iran because of hostages. Senator Long said that taking of our embassy in Iran, in his words, is an act of war. There are rumors since denied that our Navy has been called up for service. I ask you, as our commander-in-chief, is war possible? Is war thinkable?
It would be a mistake for the people of our country to have aroused within them hatred toward anyone. Not against the people of Iran, and certainly not against Iranians who may be in our country as our guests. We certainly do not want to be guilty of the same violation of human decency and basic human principles that have proven so embarrassing to many of the Iranian citizens themselves. We obviously prefer to see our hostages protected and released completely through peaceful means. And that's my deepest commitment. And that will be my goal. The United States has other options available to it, which will be considered depending upon the circumstances. But I think it would not be well advised for me to speak of those specifically tonight.
Iranian students in this country. We've been very good to them, very hospitable. Yes. Even the new finance minister of Saudi Arabia, Saudi Yab Sadiq, was a student who once demonstrated in Washington against law and order. Shouldn't we be very careful in letting any of these students come in here? Should we screen them in future and make them agree that they will not demonstrate?
Well, it's very difficult for an Iranian citizen or a student to get a visa at the American Embassy in Iran at this time. And I think the influx of Iranians to our country now would be minimal. I'm determined to enforce the law about Iranian students. Some of them have violated the law. They are now being screened. They are being assessed in their commitment and the legality of their presence here. We have already finished this procedure with more than 22,000. About 17,000 have proven to be here completely legally and are indeed full-time students. Among the other 5,000, about several hundred have already departed. Others are now having to prove that, contrary to the earliest evidence, they do indeed have a right to be in our country. If they are here illegally, they will be expelled. There is one exception to that rule. If a citizen of Iran can prove that if he or she returned to Iran, that they would be executed or abused because of their political beliefs, they can seek asylum here. And if that asylum, in our judgment, is justified, we will provide it for them. But this procedure is going forward in accordance with American law, in accordance with American fairness, in accordance with the full principles of the United States Constitution.
President, can this crisis go on indefinitely, or ought the Ayatollah Khomeini understand that at some point the American people may demand and other nations may expect that you move forward to resolve it by whatever means you find necessary?
It would not be possible or even advisable for me to set a deadline about when or if I would take certain action in the future. This is an ever-present consideration on my mind. I'm carrying out all the duties that normally fall on the president's shoulder, which are adequate, but I never forget one moment that I'm awake about the hostages whose lives and whose safety depend on me. And I am pursuing every possible avenue to have the hostages released. Any excessive threats, any excessive belief among the Iranians that they will be severely damaged by military action, as long as these negotiations are proceeding and as long as legalities can be followed, might cause the death of the hostages, which we are committed to avoid. So that's one of the questions that I cannot answer, to set down a certain deadline beyond which we would take extra action that might result in the harm or the death of the hostages. We are proceeding, I guarantee you, in every possible way, every possible moment, to get the hostages freed and at the same time protect the honor and the integrity and the basic principles of our country. That's all I can do, but I'm doing it to the best of my ability, and I believe we'll be successful.
Yes, Mr. President, many Americans view the Iranian situation as one in a succession of events that proves that this country's power is declining. How can you assure Americans tonight that our power is not declining abroad, and how are you reassessing priorities for the 80s in terms of foreign policy?
The United States has neither the ability nor the will to dominate the world, to interfere in the internal affairs of other nations, to impose our will on other people whom we desire to be free, to make their own decisions. This is not part of the commitment of the United States. Our country is the strongest on earth. We're the strongest militarily, politically, economically, and I think we're the strongest morally and ethically. Our country has made great strides, even since I've been in office. I've tried to correct some of the defects that did exist. We have strengthened the military alliances of our country, for instance. NATO now has a new spirit, a new confidence, a new cohesion, improving its military capabilities, much more able to withstand any threat from the East, from the Soviet Union or the Warsaw Pact, than it was before. We've espoused again the principles that unite Americans and make us admired throughout the world, raising the banner of human rights. We're going to keep it high. We have opened up avenues of communication, understanding, trade with people that formerly were our enemies or excluded us. Several nations in Africa, the vast people and the vast country of the People's Republic of China. In doing so, we've not alienated any of our previous friends. I think our country is strong within itself. There is not an embarrassment now about our government, which did exist in a few instances in years gone by. So I don't see at all that our country has become weak. We are strong, and we are getting stronger, not weaker. But if anybody thinks that we can dominate other people with our strength, military or political strength or economic strength, they are wrong. That's not the purpose of our country. Our inner strength, our confidence in ourselves, I think is completely adequate. And I believe the unity that the American people have shown in this instance, their patience, is not at all a sign of weakness. It is a sign of sure strength.
Mr. President, serious charges have been placed against the Shah concerning the repression of his own people and the misappropriation of his nation's funds. Is there an appropriate vehicle to investigate those charges? And do you foresee a time when you would direct your administration to assist in that investigation?
I don't know of any international forum within which charges have ever been brought against a deposed leader who has left his country. There have been instances of changing governments down through the centuries in history. And I don't know of any instance where such a leader who left his country after his government fell has been tried in an international court or in an international forum. This is a matter that can be pursued. It should be pursued under international law. And if there is a claim against the Shah's financial holdings, there is nothing to prevent other parties from going into the courts in accordance with the law of a nation or internationally and seeking a redress of grievances which they claim. But as I said earlier, I don't think there's any forum that will listen to the Iranians make any sort of claim, justified or not, as long as they hold against their will and abuse the hostages in complete contravention to every international law and every precept or every commitment or principle of humankind.
Mr. President.
You've been listening to a news conference by President Carter, who now turns away, stops to chat with some of the reporters in the East Room as he's making his way out of the room.
Is this been the worst month of your presidency?
We hear someone asking, has this been the worst month of your presidency? He only smiles and moves on. Now making his way out of the room, obviously does not want to make any more comment beyond what he has made up on the podium there in his formal statements and his response to questions in the news conference. To summarize the news conference, in his opening statement, Mr. Carter told Americans that the hostages held at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran had been subjected to inhuman and degrading conditions. And he again told the Iranian government it faces grave consequences if any of the captives is harmed. He said the U.S. will not yield to blackmail, and to reduce its vulnerability to blackmail, he included another appeal for congressional action on measures to make the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. Several times in the news conference, he repeated the point made also in the opening statement. In the opening statement, he said, for a government to applaud mob violence and terrorism, for it actually to support and, in effect, participate in the taking and holding of hostages is unprecedented in human history. In response to questions, Mr. Carter refused to discuss what kind of military options he might employ if any of the hostages is harmed. It would not be advisable to explore the options, he said, once the options will not be discussed until peaceful options have been exhausted. And he refused to set a deadline for when he might feel it necessary to move if this standoff continues in the Tehran embassy. He said it would not be a good time to discuss deadlines at this point while he pursues the attempt to get the hostages freed peacefully. He said, it's ever-present consideration in my mind. I never forget for one moment about the hostages whose lives and safety depend on me. Any excessive threats or any excessive belief by the Iranians that they might suffer damage might cause the deaths of the hostages. And therefore, he said, we can't set a deadline at this point. Mr. Carter took sole responsibility for the decision to admit the Shah to this country for medical treatment. He said he was not influenced by former Secretary of State Kissinger. There have been some reports that Kissinger and National Bank Chairman David Rockefeller had suggested that the Shah be brought in, but Mr. Carter said, no, the decision I made personally and without pressure from anyone to provide the necessary medical assistance to save his life, he said, was proper. He also said that a decision will have to be made by the Shah whether he leaves the country, by the Shah and by his medical advisors. But Mr. Carter said he had been informed the Shah's intention was to leave again when his treatment was completed, but he said he will leave on his own volition. In response to one question, whether there should be some screening of Iranian students coming in to this country that they will not demonstrate, Mr. Carter responded with some sarcasm that it's very difficult to get a visa at the American Embassy in Iran at this time. Almost all the questions, in fact every question in this news conference dealing in some way with Iran, as Mr. Carter continues to pursue every effort to get the hostages released peacefully, but again warns Iran that there will be grave consequences if they are harmed. This has been a CBS News special report, President Carter's news conference. I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News.